Boker Tov. First of all, I'd like to take this opportunity of welcoming my brother, Rabbi Yosef Adler, here to Yerushalayim for this stay for Pesach. And Mirz Hashem, there'll be many, many more opportunities here at the center to hear his Torah.
And Cheryl.
And Cheryl, yes. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. That's what you need a wife for, you know. Beseder Gamur. Beseder Gamur. Many of you know that a year ago, I engaged in my COVID project of publishing a book on 70 conversations that I had a zchut to have with our great Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, a book entitled in Hebrew, Vayhi Ben Tzor Aharon. I dedicated the book to my brother's honor, and it was really a big zchut to have a trailblazer in my family. There were some moments where perhaps I thought otherwise, when every single time I went to school, I knew Yossi Adler's brother. And I had to deal with that until about the 11th grade, when I declared independence and I went to a different summer camp. So nobody heard of and that was one of the reasons that I did not go to Karen Yavna, because there was there's a limit. Certainly very proud to be in the footsteps of my brother, who brought me into the fold with our father, Oliver Shalom, to the Rav's Shiurim. I'm very, very happy to have had that honor of dedicating the Sefer to my brother's honor. The book is available in different places in the world, and some of you know that I've been spending the last 2 months in Boston at a fellowship at Harvard. There is a major bookstore there on Harvard Street in Brookline called Brooklyn Books Shop. And the book has been in the window cover, and it's one of the first books that you would see walking into the store. Why do I mention this? I know you're not going to Brookline to buy the book. But this week I was in the store because they have a 2 o'clock mincha in the afternoon. And I saw all the books that were on the front row there were taken away and were replaced by Haggadahs. Obviously, the most prominent Haggadah was the Haggadah that my brother Rabbi Yosef Adler published on the Rav's thoughts on Haggadah Shel Pesach. I think we actually heard some of them right here this morning. And the owner of the store, who's from the Bramson family, and we know the Bramson family, who are mishpocha to our uncle, Rabbi Aaron Ziegler, she told me this week that this book is selling very, very well. Okay, so opportunity. So I don't know how well it's doing in Yerushalayim, but I can tell you that in Brookline, Massachusetts, the Haggadah is selling. And if I had to be replaced already on the shelf, so I was okay with seeing another Adler taking the space. So we just heard now somewhat of a broad view of the various stations in the Haggadah. And what I will do here is focus on, in a microscopic sense, one of the important subjects. It was touched on by my brother, but to see it in a little bit more depth. And that is the story of the Seder in Bnei Brak. The story of Rabbi Eliezer, if you see the first section. And I lifted it out of the Rambam's Haggadah. The Rambam, in the end of Hilchot Chametz Matzah, source number one, he has the Nusach of the Haggadah. And it reads, Maaseh b'Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, five leading sages, Tanaim of the Mishnah. And if you're just curious why Akiva is spelt with a hey at the end, when we know that it's spelt with an aleph, that's because you haven't seen the Yerushalmi lately. In the Talmud Eretz Yisrael, the Talmud Yerushalmi, Rabbi Akiva is spelled with a hey, and the Rambam adopted that spelling wherever he writes Rabbi Akiva. You have the big five here, and in a moment you'll see why I underlined and focused on Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva, but you have the big five. Shayu mesubim b'bnei Brak, they were reclining, observing the Seder in Bnei Brak, and they were engaged in the discussion of the Exodus throughout the entire night. It's the break of dawn. Many have discussed this section. Where was the Seder taking place? Why were these sages together? Why did they not themselves recognize that the night has come to an end? Who are these Talmidim, the students standing outside? Historians have drawn our attention to the fact that it is possible that this story has to be understood in light of the Bar Kokhba revolution, And there was a big issue amongst the great sages: should we back the revolution or not? Rambam tells us in the very end of the Mishneh Torah, it's in the 11th chapter of Luchot Melachim, that Rambam is discussing the issue of how can you identify the Mashiach? Does he come with a Tudat Zehut, Mashiach, you know, as his primary occupation? How can you identify him? Do we have to request that he perform miracles or not? And Rambam says, no such thing. We do not have to request or observe miracles performed by the Mashiach to guarantee that he is indeed the Mashiach. And the proof is Bar Kochba. Rambam says that Rabbi Akiva was Chacham Mikol Chachmei HaMishnah. He was the greatest Chacham. Now, today, if you ask somebody, you know, who's the Godel Hador, who's the greatest, all I have to know is how he voted in the last elections here, and I can tell you the answer. Because everybody with their Godel. We don't have a unanimously acclaimed or universally acclaimed Gadol Ador. We don't have it now. We didn't have it when the Lubavitch Rebbe was alive and the Rav Zichron Lebrach was alive and Rav Moshe Feinstein was alive and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was alive. We didn't have a unanimous opinion. If you were a chassid of the Ger Rebbe, so the Ger Rebbe was the Gadol Ador. It was as simple as that. If you learned in Panovich, Rav Shach was the Gadol Ador. But Rambam tells us Rabbi Akiva was the acclaimed Gadol Ador. And he didn't make it up. The Gemara tells us in the end of Masechet Brachot, there was none like him. The Gemara testifies there was none like Rabbi Akiva. And it says that he, the Chol Chachmei Doro, the entire generation, they went along with the idea that Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. Yet our Chazal teach us that there were differences of opinion on the subject. But apparently, they talked it out. And some claim that this Seder in Bnei Brak is one of the venues where this was on the agenda to discuss Bar Kokhba. And in the days of the Hadrianic persecutions, we know that public observance of mitzvot was outlawed, and that's why you have a Mishnah in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that will give you this weirdest scenario of blowing shofar in a pit down below. I never heard of even a shtibel that was established in a pit. The idea was that they had to blow shofar far away from the ears of Roman sentries. And there were people waiting outside, standing outside the pit, who would somehow advise those inside to stop blowing. And the question came up in the Mishnah, and if those people outside didn't hear the shofar directly, but they only heard the echo of the shofar, would they fulfill their obligation? It was downright dangerous to perform the mitzvah. And the less the better. Let's get as many people involved. And here too, you have Talmidim standing outside where they would be able to report to their teachers to stop the Seder, cover things up. And that's why they didn't have a clue when the break of dawn was. And the Talmidim went down and they said, Rabotenu, Higi Azman Kriyat Shema Shacharit, is now morning, the Seder has come to an end. Did Bar Kokhba, the question of Bar Kokhba and its relationship with, in general, Talmidei de Rabbi Akiva, who were the students of Rabbi Akiva, who the Gemara tells us in Masechet Yevamot, and all the Daf Yomi people are going to get to it shortly, the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva who perished in the time framework between Pesach and Shavuot, Pesach v'ad Atzeret, between Pesach and Shavuot, without getting into the details now of how this shrunk to Lag Boimer, the Gemara tells us Pesach v'ad Atzeret, and how did they die? It was an epidemic. Okay, maybe they all got COVID. I don't know. It doesn't say what. It says that a certain type of disease, and they died. Is that what happened? They all died from an epidemic? That's what the way the Gemara and the Talmud Bavli presents it. But in the letter, the Igeret of Rav Shrira Gaon, who's the father of the famous Rav Hai Gaon, and Rav Shrira Gaon was asked a very simple question. How was the Gemara compiled? How was the Mishnah compiled? How was the Gemara compiled? A two-line question that generates a book of historic data, very important data, because he goes all the way up to his own generation of the beginning of the 10th century, and he has names, dates, and places, and it's an unbelievable source of Jewish history. And then when he talks about the Bar Kokhba revolution, he talks about that the students of Rabbi Akiva perished in a shmad. And shmad doesn't only mean, as was used in the Middle Ages, conversion to Christianity. Shmad means falling because you're Jewish. And the understanding is that Rabbi Shriva Gaon understood that the students of Rabbi Akiva were soldiers of Bar Kokhba, and they fell in battle. And they fell in battle there. So if you were wondering where the first Yeshivat Hezder was, which combines Torah study and military service, it wasn't Yeshivat Kerem Biavna in 1954, but it was Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva in Bnei Brak, 1800 years ago, where he had his students, 24,000, prepared for military readiness and battle. And unfortunately, they fell. Unfortunately. And I have a little indication that the Rambam went along with this idea that Rabbi Akiva's students were warriors of Bar Kokhba. Because in that section that the Rambam wants to prove that you do not have to ask the Melech HaMashiach to perform miracles or to demonstrate that he's capable of performing miracles, and his proof text is going to be Bar Kokhba. Rabbi Akiva never asked Bar Kokhba to perform a miracle. And even though Bar Kokhba dies and falls in Beitar, nevertheless, the laws of Mashiach can be derived from the episode of Bar Kokhba. And there the Rambam says something very interesting, that Rabbi Akiva was the Nosei Kelav of Ben Kuziba. Nosei Kelav. So today, you may say Nosei Kelim is the caddies who schlep around with the guy who is playing golf. He schleps the golf clubs. He's the Nosei Kelim. Today, we say Nosei Kelim, when you study Rambam, you're talking about the commentators on the page. The Kesef Mishnah, the Magid Mishnah, the Lechem Mishnah. So they're called the Nosei Kelim. But in the Tanakh, Nosei Kelim has one usage. It's always in the military. David HaMelech was the Nosei Kelim of Shaul HaMelech, always exclusively used for military. And by the Rambam referring to Rabbi Akiva as the Nosei Kelav of Bar Kuziba, who's Bar Kokhba, as Rabbi Akiva gave the drasha from Parshat Balak, Darach Kochav B'Yakov, Zu Bar Kuziba, and hence he's referred to as Bar Kokhba, the Rambam saw the military side in everything that he was doing. Rabbi Akiva was the champion. He wasn't the general on the field, but he certainly was the inspiration for his own students to be involved in the military side of Bar Kokhba, the Nosei Kelav of Bar Kuziba. And here you have this very, very potentially great moment for Am Yisrael that turns out to be a wholesale catastrophe. More people, more Jews died in the downfall of the Bar Kokhba revolution than in the Churban, destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. Between 1 million and 2 million Jews perish here in Eretz Yisrael during that time period. And unfortunately, the Galut, the exile, actually begins from the Hadrianic persecutions after the Bar Kokhba revolution fails. And if you recall on Tisha B'Av, we have that rather easier kina elegy that we say on Tisha B'Av, the contrast between B'tzeitim Mitzrayim, B'tzeitim Yerushalayim, B'tzeitim Mitzrayim, B'tzeitim Yerushalayim. So there it says, Moshe Yarenu V'Aron Yanchenu B'tzeitim Mitzrayim, and then it talks about Nebuchadnezzar and Andrianus. Doesn't talk about Titus, who destroys the Beit HaMikdash. It says Andrianus B'tzeitim Yerushalayim, because the Galut, the exile, began in the days of Rabbi Akiva at that time. And therefore, unfortunately, it was a very, very big calamity. Yet, they're sitting contemplating the Galut of and where perhaps are we exiting the Galut. And I remember the Rav Zichron Levracha explaining allegorically or homiletically that Gedolei Yisrael are constantly sitting up the whole night of Galut. Nighttime is Galut, is exile. Daytime is the break of dawn, is the beginning of Geula. And they're sitting the entire ages, thousands, 2,000 years almost, and contemplating when the Yitziah is going to happen. And they're discussing it. And remember, the Rav brought that shir to some conclusion. And the next morning, I asked the Rav permission if I can conclude that drasha on a different note. He says, go right ahead. And I said, the drasha ends with, Ad shebo talmidim v'amru lahem rabotenu, higia zman kriyat shma shel shacharit. The Gedolei Yisrael won't announce the Geula. It's going to be their students. it's going to be the younger generation. And I was talking very, very contemporary with him at the time. The question of seeing and viewing what's happening here in Eretz Israel, is it going to be a declaration of the generation of the past years, or is it going to be by the pioneering deeds, perhaps, of the younger generation? Rabotenu, Higia Zman Kriyat Shma Shacharit. You're still debating and discussing, but guess what? It's here. It has happened. And sometimes, unfortunately, great people may not have taken note. This is on an agadic note. But more to understanding the story itself. Why exactly did this story, we're told it happened in Bnei Brak? Why is that important? Because it teaches us two halachot, very important halachot. One is, a student in front of his own principal Rebbe, his Rav Mufak, does not sit reclined on Seder night. Why? Because it's not proper respect. However, if a student is sitting at Seder night in front of his Rebbe Mufak, his Rav Mufak, but he, the student, is the Mara da Atra, is the teacher, the Rav of the place, then he does sit, Bahav Seva. And here Rabbi Akiva is the Rav in Bnei Brak, and he's sitting in front of Rabbi Tarfon, who's his Rebbe. And the idea that they're all sitting Mesubin can only happen if it's in a place that Rabbi Akiva is the Mara da Atra, the Rav. And indeed, that's what happens. Rabbi Akiva is the Rav of Bnei Brak, and he also is sitting Mesubin in the presence of his own Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva. I tasted this Mara da Atra bit when I was all 24 years old. I began the rabbinate in a small shul in New York City, and I remember the Rav telling me that you're very lucky, all your chaverim had to go out of town for their first shul. Well, my brother Rav Yosef started in Teaneck, never left Teaneck, so he was also equally as fortunate. But we were in Long Island City, Astoria, and we didn't have to go out of town. So there was a little bit of a nice get-together of the kihila. You know, they call it a, here they call it a hachtara, there they call it a what do you call it? Installation. My wife always said, you install a refrigerator, you install an air conditioner, there they install rabbis, you know, beseda, an installation. Rabbi Zvulun Chalap, who was the menahel of the yeshiva, came on behalf of the yeshiva. And I remember after the ceremony, we had to rearrange. The shul was like a Rav Tachliti. It was a multi-function shul. So we had to move the chairs around. We wanted to have Marav. The Mechitz was a little bit on the side, this and that. And I had to make a split decision about something. And I turned to Rabbi Chalap, and he looked at me and he said, Aaron, you're the Mara da Asra here. Whatever you say, I'm going to follow. And I realized, wow, that is awesome responsibility. Just to hear that, right then and there, I felt it on my shoulders. And Rabbi Akiva didn't have to have that. But let's see what happens here in this particular story. So my brother mentioned the Mishnah that's found in Masechet Brachot of the story of Reb Loz ben Azariah, Hareini Kiven Shivim Shana. My brother and I can identify a little bit with the age here. Arayni kivenchim shana v'lo zachiti shete amer yitziat mitzrayim balelot. So there was an issue whether the saying of the third parasha of Shema has to be done at nighttime as well. That was the machloket. That was the dispute. Chachamim said no, and Ben Zoma said yes, and Rav Lozem Azariah was in agreement with Ben Zoma, and finally it's pushed through, and indeed, we say three parashiot of Shema every night, not only two. We mention yitziat mitzrayim at nighttime. And most people assume that the source is the fifth Mishnah of the first chapter of Masechet Brachot and was brought over to the Haggadah. So you know, there's always a question, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Maybe it was the other way around. Maybe there was a midrash, and from the midrash, this was brought into the Mishnah. For what is Mishnah? What does Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi do? He has on his table all the sayings of the Tanaim. Some of it becomes Mishnah, some become relegated to a type of second-tier Mishnah known as Tosefta, and the rest are either in the framework of Medrash or independent Breita that may or may not be quoted in the Talmud Bavli or the Talmud Yerushalmi, and some got lost, actually. So Mishnah began as any other saying of Tanaim, but they were upgraded by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, the final editor of the Mishnah, to Mishnah status. And it is important to know that it has Mishnah status. But it's possible that this Mishnah of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Harei Kiven Shivim Shana, its source isn't the Mishnah, but its source is something else in the world of Medrash, and was upgraded to be Mishnah. One word in the Rambam's Haggadah is the key. After the story is completed, as if to say, Ad shebo talmidehem v'amru lahem rabotenu higiyaz man kriyat shom shacharit, so you have another paragraph. But in the Rambam, it doesn't open up as a new paragraph, it just continues. Amar lahem Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. The story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah saying that I am like 70 years old, and I wish I could have convinced people to adopt my opinion. And lo and behold, I discovered the Medrash of Ben Zoma, who argued with Chachamim. And because Ben Zoma was a single opinion, his opinion never made it. But now I'm joining Ben Zoma. And by joining Ben Zoma, now it's two. And two means I'm no longer a single opinion. And my opinion can compete with an opinion that's called Chachamim. How many people are part of Chachamim? 200 makes no difference. It's already not a single opinion. And I have a chance now to push my opinion through because I've discovered the medrash of the view of Ben Zoma. And he says this over at the Seder of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Amalahem Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. It's part and parcel of the story of this medrash that eventually makes it into the Haggadah. But this last part makes it into the Mishnah without the word lahem, because it's inappropriate in the context of the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is given a headline, Maskirim Yitziat Mitzrayim Balelot. That's a dogmative halakha. We are to mention the Exodus in the Kriyat Shema at night. That's it. And then the Mishnah goes and tells us, by the way, I'm like 70 years old and I never had the opportunity to really be convincing about this until I discovered the drasha of Ben Zoma. That's all in the Mishnah. But it's added into the Mishnah as a type of background to why the Mishnah has a definitive statement in favor of Maskirim Yitziat Mitzrayim Balelot. And the word Amar Lahem is inappropriate in the Mishnah and therefore it just says Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And that's how it was printed in most of the Haggadot, because they knew it by heart from the Mishnah. Like I knew this Mishnah by heart at in elementary school. So that's how it was printed. When you see the Rambam, and I checked the various Kitveyad manuscripts of the Rambam, they all have it in the Rambam, Amar Lahem, and it's part and parcel of the story. What happened here? It has to do with the mitzvah of Sipu Yetzir Mitzrayim, until what time at nighttime is the mitzvah operative. So my brother mentioned it just in general, quoted the pasuk, Vachlu et basar balayla hazeh, and indeed, in the continuation of the medrash that's quoted about when is this mitzvah operative, Yochol me Rosh Chodesh, perhaps Rosh Chodesh Nisan, we should start, no, Talmud Lomar, Bavur Zeh, this unique mitzvah, not the mitzvah of Zechirat Yetzir Mitzrayim of every single day, and according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, day in and day out, at nighttime, but the specific, unique mitzvah of Sipur Yetzir Mitzrayim is relevant only when there's the mitzvah of Matzah Mora. One of the Rishonim, the Shibboleth HaLeket, preserves the nusach of the Medrash as it was yet in the days of Beit HaMikdash. Adche Pesach Matzah Umaror Munachim Lefanecha. Of course, that word Pesach was taken out because we don't have the Korban Pesach. But originally it said that the Bavur Zeh, B'Sha'a She Pesach Matzah Umaror Munachim Lefanecha. And we know that the Korban Pesach is the principal mitzvah of the night, and two other mitzvot come along for the ride. According to one opinion in the Gemara, which is non-halachic, it was rejected, both matzah and maror are not independent mitzvot. They come along with the ride with the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. And if there is no Korban Pesach, there is no mitzvah of matzah or maror from a biblical point of view in our Seder. The Gemara then says there's another opinion, the opinion of the Amora Rava, that matzah carries with it an independent pasuk. Ba'erev tochlu matzot. And hence, matzah is an independent mitzvah biblically, midoraita. Maror was rejuvenated to become a mitzvah to eat at Seder night, where in the days of Beit Mikdash, there was no mitzvah to eat maror as a mitzvah, but it was a mitzvah to have maror together with the Korban Pesach. Al matzot umrorim yochluhu. It was like eating, you know, chazeret, chrein with gefilte fish. So they had the Korban Pesach together with maror and matzah. But there was an independent mitzvah to eat matzah as well. So when it says Pesach matzah umaror, that means there's a linkage between the unique mitzvah of Sipo Yetziat Mitzrayim, which most people quote the pasuk Vigadata Levincha, and why not? But that wouldn't really obligate somebody who's making a seder on his or her own. The Rambam uses a different pasuk as the operative pasuk for Sipo Yetziat Mitzrayim, and he says in the seventh parak of Hilchot Chametz Matzah, he quotes from Shmot Yud Gimel, Zachor et hayom hazeh asher yetzatem mitzrayim, kemo she'amar zachor et yom ha-shabbat. The word zachor doesn't mean to remember in your mind, but it means to articulate. Just like Shabbat, you have to spell it out, and we call it Kiddush Friday night. That's the zachor et hayom hazeh asher yetzatem mitzrayim. But then the Rambam follows through that there's a mitzvah to share this talking out with others, as it says, v'yigadlu levincha, principally with one's children, but then the orbit expands to others as well. But the principal mitzvah is zachorat hayom hazeh asher yetzatem mitzrayim. And when is this mitzvah operative? When there's the mitzvah of Pesach matzah umaror. That's when the mitzvah is obligatory. So now we have to ask the question, when is the mitzvah of Pesach matzah umaror? We have to have an answer for that. So we know when it starts. It starts at night. At night of the Seder. When does it end? When does it end? That's a dispute between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Loza ben Azariah. Rabbi Akiva says, Kol HaLaila, you can have the Korban Pesach. And if you can eat the Korban Pesach, Kol HaLaila, the entire night, then what schleps along with it is the mitzvah of Sipo Yetziat Mitzrayim, Kol Oto HaLaila. But if you observe the mitzvah, if you understand that the mitzvah of eating Korban Pesach is only until midnight, Chatzot Laila, you have to check the calendar with summertime, it's usually about 12:40 summertime, here, the nighttime, it's Chatzot Laila, then the mitzvah of Sipu Yetziat Mitzrayim, relating the story and in depth, with analysis, with application, practical application to today's day and age, B'chol Dov V'dor Chayav Adam Nechot Et Atzmo Kilu Yatzah Mimitzrayim. So then the mitzvah of Sipu Yetziat Mitzrayim comes to an abrupt end at midnight. At midnight. What happened when the clock struck 12 in Bnei Brak at that Seder? Well, Rabbi Akiva is the Marad Atra. He's the Rav of the place. So in a dispute between two of the participants here, Rabbi Akiva, Lozem and Azariah and Rabbi Akiva, certainly they're going to keep going the entire night. Because that's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. That even though there's no Beit HaMikdash here, it's 65 years after the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash, they're going to be Osek B'Sipu Yetziat Mitzrayim Kol Oto HaLaila. Because he's in Bnei Brak and he's the Rav there. But what would Rabbi Lozem and Azariah do, sitting at this Seder, and he's looking at his watch, and it's 12 o'clock? Does he say, Chevra, I'm done, and say, Chag Sameach, see you in the morning? Now that would be disrespectful. But what he does do is he registers a type of halachic protest. He says, Amar lahem Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. This happens exactly at Chatzot, at midnight. Harei ani kiven shevim shana, v'lo zachiti she'te'amer yetziat Mitzrayim ba'leilot. From my point of view, the Seder's over. The Seder is over, because you don't eat Korban Pesach after midnight, and hence there's no more matzah maror and Sipo Yetziat Mitzrayim after midnight. But I am partner to the drasha of Ben Zoma, that there's another framework of Yetziat, talking about Mitzrayim. It's not the unique mitzvah of Leil HaSeder, Seder night, but it's throughout the year. We have to give expression to Yetziat Mitzrayim, morning, and nighttime, says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah.
And that mitzvah does not require you to go into any great depth. It doesn't require you to spend a lot of time. How long does it take a person to say, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Hotzeiti Etchem Me'eretz Mitzrayim, Liot Lachem L'Elokim? I've done it. Didn't take long. And that's what we do in the morning, and that's what we do at night. And that's what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, you have to do it at night. That's the minimum. Give some basic expression. But is there a maximum to fulfill the general mitzvah that's all year round and daytime according to everybody and nighttime according to Ben Zoma and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? Is there a maximum? No maximum. You can go, you can say more. You can spend a minute. You can spend an hour. You can spend 6 hours. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, let the record stand correct here. What I am continuing at this Seder in Bnei Brak is not part of the framework of Zachor et hayom hazeh asher yotzatem mitzrayim or vigadat levincha. But I have shifted now to another box, another rubric. I am now in the framework of remembering the story of Mitzrayim. That mitzvah was around yesterday and the day before, and it's going to be around tomorrow and the day after and after Pesach. But I'm going to spend 5.5 hours performing it tonight, that's all. So it's not a waste of time for me to sit here in Bnei Brak until the morning. On this discussion of Chatzot, midnight, as opposed to the entire nighttime, just 2 weeks ago, we read Parshat Tazria. And in source number 3, so first of all, let me just say something about source number 2, because this is going to be important. Apparently, Rabbi Akiva and Elazar ben Azariah are focusing on two different possibilities of how the redemption is going to come about. The Gemara tells us in the end of Masechet Sanhedrin, source number 2, Omer of Alexandria, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Rami, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi contrasted, at the end of Yeshayahu, Perek Samach, we read it as part of the Haftarah of Parshat Ki Tavo in the summer. It says, Ani Hashem, I am God, bi'ita, in its time, achishena, I will hasten the redemption. Chazal feel this is what's called in literature an oxymoron. If it's in its time, if it's scheduled, then it's not accelerated. If it's accelerated, it's not in its time. And so too, the Gemara contrasts another two psukim, one from Daniel, Va'aru im ananei shamayim, that somehow the redemption is going to come from heaven, cloud in the heaven, or Rochev alachamor, as it says in Zechariah, Aniv Rochev alachamor. Remember, our grandfather of Shalom used to say, what a shame it says chamor, a donkey. If it would have been a Mercedes, it would have come a little faster. Rochev alachamor. And in both cases, these contrasts, Rabbi Shua ben Levi says that they spell out different possibilities of geula, of redemption. Zachu, if Am Yisrael is worthy, if there's a repentive movement, and everybody turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will step on the gas and accelerate the process. Achishena. Then there are going to be supernatural events that will occur in bringing about the geula. It's going to be min hashamayim. But if it's business as usual by Am Yisrael, and no particular mass return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what the Gemara calls lo zachu, not worthy, the geula is going to happen anyway. It's been promised, it's been assured, it's going to happen. But it's going to happen in a radically different way, but through the natural course of history. It's going to be be'ita, in its time. The word be'ita, ayin taf, eight, time, season. It's going to be in its time. It's rochev ala chamor. Chamor, as the Maharal Miprag interpreted, means chomriyut, through the material world. And that's how it's going to happen, through natural process. And you don't have to be a big prophet to see what's happened in the last 115 years, 120 years. How our return to Eretz Yisrael has happened without the splitting of the Red Sea, without 10 plagues, taking a long time. It's at a heavy price, but it is happening. Where in the days of the second Beit HaMikdash, about 5% of Am Yisrael come back to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash. That wasn't a state of Israel and an Israeli army. That was the Beit HaMikdash with a Kohen Gadol going into the Kodesh Kodeshim on Yom Kippur. How many came back? About 5%. 5%. And as Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzari tells us, and he's so embarrassed to the question of the Melech HaKazar, if you're familiar with the way that book is written, it's like a on stage, an off-Broadway play of the Melech HaKazar with Rabbi Yehuda Halevi talking, and he says, you know, you've got me here. I'm thoroughly embarrassed. Why didn't they come back? Because they had their homes and they had their businesses and their fields. And you know, their grandparents were refugees from the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. And we're settled. Settled. And that's why the second Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. What the Gemara tells us in Masechet Yoma, Daftet, of Sinat Chinam, that was the final blow. But Rabbi Yehuda Halevi says the second Beit HaMikdash didn't have a chance of surviving because Am Yisrael balked and didn't come. And didn't come. That was 5%. Today, 46% of Am Yisrael live in Eretz Yisrael. Just for contrast, 46%. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu should give each and every one good health. In about 10 to 15 years, we're crossing the 50-yard line. A 51% of Am Yisrael. And that is going to impact on Shemitah and Truma and Maser. And remember the Rav telling me once, we were talking about religious Zionism. What is religious Zionism? He said, you have to take the frozen mitzvahs out of the freezer and thaw them out. And that's exactly what we're doing here in Eretz Yisrael. Activating mitzvot that in Volozhin and Brisk were just subject matter for a shir klali and not to be performed. This is what we're doing here. And this is a natural, natural process. I have a son. Many of you who come to my shurim have heard about him often enough. My son, Eitan. Not even going to tell you what he does for a living, because some of you know. Right, he's the El Al pilot, right. So my son, Eitan, is also a darshan. So he said once that when it says, Ani Hashem bi'ita achishena, don't read it with a taf, read it with a tet, bi'ita. When they'll get a kick, I don't have to tell you where, then achishena, then they're going to start moving. This morning, I saw in the paper that French Jews said, if Le Pen wins the election in 2 weeks, we won't say L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim, ela b'chodesh haba b'Yerushalayim. They'll get a bi'ita, they'll get a kick. And they'll start coming. Okay, some people need the kick. We know that. We know that. So you have two possibilities of geula, and that's why the Rambam tells us in the 11th chapter of Hilchot Malachim, Lo yada adam ma yiyu ad shiyu. Nobody knows what's going to happen until it happens, because the Nevi'im don't have an absolute tradition. Our Chachamim do not have an absolute tradition. It could be this way, it could be that way. Don't put all your eggs in one basket here. Don't bet on it. Don't think about it a lot. Just have a general belief in the coming of Mashiach and be patient. And be patient. It'll happen. It could be this way, it could be that way. But nevertheless, there are those who take sides, at least in terms of the preference or the figuring of how it's going to come about. Rabbi Akiva took a stand. It's going to happen by natural means. And Bar Kokhba is the agent. And he has an army. And we're going to revolt against Rome. And we're going to beat them. And we're going to begin building Beit HaMikdash. You know, for 3 years, there was an independent Jewish state here that minted coins. You go to the Hebrew, to the Israel Museum, you go to the Museum Eretz Yisrael in Tel Aviv, North Tel Aviv, you'll see coins that say, Shimon Bar Kuziba Nisi Yisrael. The word Nasi doesn't mean president in the Chumash, it means the Melech. In Nasi Yecheta, the Melech. He was the king, and not just the general. And they were beginning to talk about the building of the third Beit HaMikdash. Because Rabbi Akiva felt if it was 70 years between the first and the second, and now we're 65 years after the second, in a few years we're at 70, and it'll be 70, and we'll build the Beit HaMikdash. The beginnings were happening already. Rabbi Lozman and Azariah said, no, it's not going to come by natural means. And let's get into the Parsha Tazria and understand this. Source number three. In source number three, it says, "Vaydaber Hashem Moshe lemor, daber b'nei Yisrael, isha ki tazriya v'yalda zachar, v'tamash shivat yamim, ki mei nidat devota titma." Remember something I think my father Shalom told me about this pasuk, a little humoristic note,
that in Poland, they used to have shuls for different tradespeople. It happens to be true. In Lodz, I once went to a shul, one existing shul left, and it was just for, I think, tailors. So people of their own trade had their own shul. So the joke was that there was a shul just for amaratzim, ignorant people. Imagine, how many amaratzim could have in there. So came Parsha Zucha, Parsha Zachor, the way they said it in Galicia, Parsha Zucha, nobody knew what to lane because they were all Amaratzim. So one guy pipes up and he says, I know what to lane. Isha ki tazriya v'yolda Zuchar. So they threw him out. They said he wasn't an Amaratz. So what you have here is halachot that related to childbirth. And we know a child comes into this world by one or two modes of childbirth. One is natural childbirth, and one is cesarean section. Or to use the halakhic norm, yotzei dofan. It's a Mishnah, Masechet Nida, and Masechet Bechorot. Yotzei dofan is an idiomatic expression in modern Hebrew when you want to say something's highly unusual. It's a mashu yotzei dofan. We use it in modern Hebrew. And what it means is, removed from an incision was made in the abdomen, and the baby came out from the side. Yotzei dofan, from the wall. That's what it means, Yotzei Dofan. Now, in time of old, up until the late 19th century, a cesarean section was a death warrant for the mother. She never survived. There was hemorrhaging, there was infection, they didn't know how to control it, they didn't have antiseptic equipment and other medications and so on. She died. She died from it. So much so, there's a Mishnah in the 8th parak of Masechet Bechorot that talks about two possible firstborn. One is a bechor for Yerusha, for inheritance. One is a bechor for Pidyon HaBen. How can you have two from the same mother and same father? How can you have two? So it's a view that Rabbi Shimon says, and it's not l'halakha, but nevertheless the Rambam in his Mishnah commentary has to give us an example, and he's scratching his head, doesn't even know. How could this be? Because he said, somebody wrote that the woman gave birth through cesarean and healed, got pregnant again, and had a natural baby. Rambam says, this is a pella. He's never seen this. You know why? Because every such woman died. She's going to recover and get pregnant again. So the Rav Kapach, that's all the Yemenite scholar who issued the edition of the Perush HaMishnah, says, what was the Rambam time a pella, today is Masim B'chol Yom. In my own family, one daughter and one daughter-in-law exactly had these scenarios of a cesarean. And then afterwards, Baruch Hashem, natural babies came out. So there were situations where the firstborn is from a Yotze Dofem. So he's the firstborn, so he gets the Yerusha Pishnayim, the double inheritance. But the second was Petarechem. So the second was a bechor for purposes of Pidyon HaBen. Again, we don't hold like this, the halacha, but at least that scenario, the Rambam couldn't understand how this can happen, because the baby's going to die. The mother's going to die, rather, from Yotze Dofan. But one thing we know, there are different halachot. Even if the woman survives, we know that the Torah teaches us about the period of Tumat Yoledet, Tumat Leida. She's impure for a certain amount of time. That's only after a natural birth. Not after a cesarean. So here, be careful. I'm not poskening. I'm not wearing my hat as a poisek. If a cesarean is scheduled before the woman goes into labor, then what I'm saying now exactly might happen, because then she gave birth without any dimum, with any hemorrhaging whatsoever. But if the birth process started already, and then in process the doctors discovered that there was something wrong and they had to remove the baby by an incision, so then there would be tumat yoledet. If there's a shayla, yes, rough. But theoretically speaking, the din, the halacha of tumat yoledet is only for natural birth. Second, only a natural birth is the korban, what the Torah here is talking about to bring korbanot, is only after a natural birth, not after a cesarean. And if there's a cesarean on Shabbat, the Brit next week is not on Shabbat, it's Sunday. And if it's a firstborn, there's no pidyon haben, because there's no petarechem. So there are differences whether the baby is born naturally or through a cesarean, a yotze dofen situation. The Gemara tells us in the end of Masechet Sanhedrin, Sarchet HaMabet, that the era prior to Yemot HaMashiach will be difficult. They are equivalent to birth pangs. Chevlo Shel Mashiach. We sing this on Friday night in Mayid Yiduot, for those who sing Zmirot. It says, Mechevle Mashiach Yutzalu Lirvacha. Lirvacha is Revach Vatzala. It means
there will be a, it'll be a help, it'll be Yeshua, redemption, and so on. And we ask Kadosh Baruch Hu to spare us the agony of the period before Mashiach time. Mechevle Mashiach yutzalu l'rvacha. And if Chazal equated the period before Yamot HaMashiach to Chevle Mashiach, most probably they had in mind, there are two ways this may happen. It may happen as natural childbirth, by natural progression of events, and in that scenario, unfortunately, we're going to pay a price of korbanot. That's a childbirth with sacrifices. And we have paid that price here in Eretz Israel up until last week, inclusive, unfortunately. Unfortunately. This morning there was an attempt at pigua. Thank God the policeman is okay. Mechabel's not here to talk about it anymore. So we know this. And there's a lot of tumah, because there's a lot of tumat meit, and a lot of wounded, and a lot of dam. That's what goes along with Geulat Yisrael, the redemptive process by natural means. It's natural childbirth. And it goes along with all the discomfort and pain associated with natural childbirth. But there could be another way to do this. And that could be Baderich Yotzei Dofan, in an unusual manner, by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, as the obstetrician will intervene in the process and call the Chevle Mashiach to an abrupt end and remove the baby and have the Geula come right in front of our steps. And if that happens, it will be without korbanot, without, it will be a bloodless type of operation, and it will be of a miraculous nature. And that's a completely different way of seeing things. How did Reb Lozem and Azariah envision Geula? B'chatzi ha-layla. Smack in the middle of the night, Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to intervene and bring us out, just like he did the first time around. And it's derived from Gzeira Shava, Balailahu, Balailahu, Vavarti ben Yisro Beretz Mitzrayim, Balailahu, and Vikeite Kol Bechor, Beseda. That's the language of the Medrash. But what did Reb Lozem and Azariah see? He saw a Geula of a divine intervention in the middle of the night. And if you go through that story of Vahibachtzi Alayla in the poem that we say in Haggadah Seder Night, so get a picture of all the times that there were interventions, Bachtzi Alayla. It goes through Tanakhic history in so many episodes where Kadosh Baruch Hu intervenes, Bachtzi Alayla. And remember, the Rav explained many times over the reason that we say Hallel at night. And I'm sure my brother can give 10,000 shiurim just on the various takes that the Rav had on why we say Hallel on the night. What's the Chiddush? The Chiddush is, if you just look at source number 6, Hallel is a daytime expression. Hallel is a mitzvah for daytime. Lahagid baboker chazdecha, but emunatcha balelot. Hallel is for daytime. The Gemara calls, takes the pasuk, Ze ayom asa Hashem nagila v'nismecha bo. It's a daytime mitzvah. The one exception is Seder night. And there are many, many different explanations for this exception. I remember the Rav once said on a homiletic note, he said, the night of the Seder at Chatzot Laila becomes daytime. Vahi Bachtzi Alayla. How does that poem say at the very end, Vahi Bachtzi Alayla? Karev l'yom asher lo yom v'lo laila. Kadosh Baruch Hu should bring the day that's not day, not night. Everything's all mixed up. But it says, Ta'ir, we ask Kadosh Baruch Hu to illuminate B'cheshkat Laila, in the midst, the darkest of the night. When is that? Vahi Bachtzi Alayla, he shall illuminate. And when the thickness of the night is illuminated, it becomes daytime. And the question is, our Halakha today, is it in accordance with Rabbi Lozman Azariah or Rabbi Akiva? Well, it's a machloket. If you look at Shulchan Aruch, it's going to tell you that in theory you can have the Seder the whole night, but the Ramah says, until Chatzot. Okay, what until Chatzot? So the Ramah says, at least the Matzah Safikoyman until Chatzot. But then you can carry on with Halel after Chatzot. There are those who are careful to have the Seder, at least the Halel part, in the fourth cup, also before Chatzot. I don't know if you've seen the OU magazine
that I picked up in the States, but I'm sure it's here too somehow. So our great Rebbe Rav Shechter was interviewed. I think one of the nice things of his interview was very nice, but he also has this great picture of sitting there with his grandson over Gemara. That's such a sweet picture because he's teaching, you know, whether the grandson is absorbing or not absorbing, it's like Rabbi Tarfon, whose mother took him in a carriage to the Beit Midrash to absorb the sounds of Torah study. It's such a great picture of Rav Shechter with his grandson there. But the article is just a Q&A, question and answer, and one of the questions is Chatzot, and Rav Shechter says, look, there are those who say after Chatzot you can continue with Hallel. He says, I finish Hallel before Chatzot. Okay, so I'm going to digress for a second to an interesting anecdote. Back in Tavshin Lamed Gimel, the 72-73, but I'm talking about the Pesach of 73, when I studied at Yeshivat HaRetzion in Alon Shvut, what we call the Gush. And in those days, not everybody had family to go to for Leila Seder. I was fortunate that I had my uncle who just passed away, my uncle A.B. Adler, Zichron Levracha, and I would have gone to him for Seder night. That was pretty clear. But both Rashi Yeshiva invited all the chutznikim to their homes for Leila Seder. Okay, so that's going to be an attraction. The question is, there's Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Mital, Zichron Levracha. And most of the guys naturally gravitated to one or the other. But I was caught in a bind because I was very close to both of them. So who am I going to go? I have to pick and choose? What, flip a coin? How am I going to do this? Rav Mital, Zichron Levracha, came over to me before Pesach and he said, Agala, you're coming to my house. Why? Why? He says, because by Rav Aaron, by Rav Lichtenstein, they're going to say Chidusha Torah the whole time, and 15 minutes before Chatzot, midnight, Rav Aaron's going to look at his watch, and he realizes, I have to eat the matzah, the maror, the koirech, the sandwich, and the afikoyman. You're not going to get a meal there. Come to my house, and we stop talking at 10:30. Whoever wants to talk can talk at 2 in the morning. That's what he told me. Can talk at 2 in the morning. I thought he was kibitzing. First of all, I did that. I went to Rav Mital. It was great Seder. About 5 years ago, I heard Rav Lichtenstein's son, Rav Meir Lichtenstein, who's a Rav in the Beit Shemesh, give a talk at Matan here in Yerushalayim. And he said, before I got married, I never knew there was even a meal at Seder night. So it's true. It was true. Chatzot Laila. Oy, Chatzot Laila. All right, so we know that the Balei HaTosfot decided in accordance with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, because there are many Mishnayot that seem to indicate that. HaPesach Nechal Ela At Chatzot. HaPesach Notar. Chatzot Notar. Many, what we say in the Zeh Mekoman Shel Zvachim, it's Chatzot. There are many indications that it's Chatzot, midnight. And so decides Rabbi the Balei HaTosfot, and that's why it's in the Ramah Sheisalus. What about the Rambam? Rambam was there to make trouble, right? Or to give sources, you know, for people to give nice shiurim. The Rambam, when he writes his Perush HaMishnah, Mishnah commentary, he also decides like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, but he changed his mind, and he erases it all, and he holds like Rabbi Akiva, and that's the way he says it in the Mishnah Torah. If you take a look at source number 13 on the second page. I'm sorry, so it's number 14. Kvar be'arnu b'kama mekomot, I've already explained this several places. She'en ha'pesach nechal ela at chatzot, kedei laharchik min avera. No, this is only rabbinic. V'din Torah, but d'oraita, she'uchal kol alayla at she'amor la'ashacha. You can eat it the whole night. Which means the Rambam ultimately moves over from Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah to Rabbi Akiva on this question. Is it midnight or is it the entire night? And it is the Rambam who becomes completely linked to Rabbi Akiva, both in terms of his halakha and his hashkafa. When the Rambam talks about the philosophical problem of free will and determination, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu knows everything, so it looks like everything's determined, but yet there's free will. How does Rabbi Akiva say it in Pirkei Avot? It says, Hakol Natun, no, Hakol Safui Varshut Natuna. Everything is known, but the permission was granted. The Rambam says, couldn't have been a better person than Rabbi Akiva to say such a thing. I've never seen the Rambam give grades to any of the Chachamim. And here he cites Rabbi Akiva. He says, wow, that's Rabbi Akiva talking. And for sure, Rabbi Akiva to Rambam becomes one of his great mentors in terms of putting together what Yahadut is all about in the fullest sense, he moves over to Rabbi Akiva's view. So Shulchan Aruch picks up on Rambam's view, and you can have the Seder the whole night, but the Rambam says, like the Balei HaTosfot, Chatzot. And indeed, we keep Chatzot in our minds when we get to the Matzah Afikoymen, at least, and for some people, till Halel. Vahi b'chtzia layla. That moment is divine intervention. Says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu can pull it off, even though it looks terrible. It looks like it's getting even worse. But nevertheless, in the middle of the night, Kadosh Baruch Hu did it, and comes the poem and says, Vahi b'chtzia layla, then, and again, and again, and again, and he will do it again. Ta'ir lanu b'cheshkat layla, in the midst of the darkness, he can and hopefully will bring it about once again. Vahi b'chtzia layla. And hence, when we sing on Friday nights, and Friday night is the spirit of Acharit HaYamim, of the end of days, every single Friday night, as the Kabbalists understood, like Shlomo Levi Al-Kabatz from Tzvat, Lecha Dodi Likrat Kala, Pnei Shabbat Nikabla, bringing in the spirit of Hit Oruri, of Yeshayahu HaMelech, of Lo Tevoshi V'lo Tikomi, of Yeshayahu HaMelech. All these lines of the Lecha Dodi, straight out of the book of Yeshayahu, of the third redemption, which happens every Shabbat in a spirited way. Lecha Dodi Likrat Kala, Pnei Shabbat Nikama. This year, we're going to sit at Seder night on Friday night. So while we don't say Lecha Dodi Minag Ashkenaz, nevertheless, we do say Lecha Dodi if you daven Minag Sfarad, the first two stanzas and the last two stanzas. I'm just going to end this thought that our great Rebbe Durov taught us about why this is so, which seems so inappropriate, where the whole poem is built on a formulation that goes from beginning to the end and also has the acrostic of his name. Why it says Shamor v'Zachor and not Zachor v'Shamor? One of the reasons is he needs the shin for Shlomo Halevi, which is Shlomo Halevi Al-Kavatz. But the Rav said something phenomenal. He said, every Friday night, we invite a Kadosh Baruch Hu into our homes. And that's what it means, Lecha Dodi, Likrat Kal, Pnei Shabbat. And the Chachmei Tzfat did what the Gemara talked about, going out to the field. Bo Neitze Likrat Shabbat Malkata. Let's go to the field and welcome in Shabbat. Turning to the Ma'arav, the setting of the sun. That's where the Kedusha is, as Kodesh Kodeshim is on the west. And that's why the significance of the Kotel Ma'aravi on the west. And this is what they did. But on Yom Tov, on Shalosh Regalim, we're not supposed to be home. All of Am Yisrael is supposed to go to Yerushalayim. And we're supposed to meet up with HaKadosh Baruch Hu at his home. So what are you extending an invitation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to come to your house where you're not going to be home? So the Yekah said, that's correct. So there's no Lecha Dodi this coming Friday night. But the Chassidim said something else. They said something else. I remember when I was functioning in a school setting for many, many years. So sometimes you make a simcha, and you know, you feel you want to invite the whole staff, but you really don't want to invite the whole staff. So what do? In the teacher's lounge, you put up a sign on the bulletin board, La Lirot, just see this as a personal invitation. When I see that, all I know is one thing, wish the person Mazel Tov, and that's the end. Because if the person wanted you to come, the person would have sent you an invitation. But that's a polite way of inclusion, and maybe they'll bring some schnapps and cake after the wedding, something like that, and that's it. We don't want a Kadosh Baruch Hu to come to our house on to this coming, because we want to go to Yerushalayim for the first day of Pesach. So Lecha Dodi is just a belated, backhanded invitation. You're invited to come, but don't show up, because we're not going to be home. We're not going to be home. We're going to be fulfilling Shalosh Pamim Bashana Yere'e Kol Tzruchat Pnei Hashem Elokecha B'Makom Asher Yivchar B'Chag HaMatzot V'Chag HaShavot V'Chag HaSukkot. And Mirtz Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us the strength to live to that great day where all of our Pesach, of all of Klal Yisrael, be V'Nochal Sham Min HaZvachim U'Min HaPsachim Asher Yagia and Hashem Mizbechacha and L'Ratzon. And the Kadosh Baruch should give us, again, should be, we say, Chag Kasher V'Sameach. I always tell people, Kasher it's going to be with three Hashgachas for Pesach on toilet paper. It's going to be very Kasher, no doubt. It should be Sameach. It should be a Chag Sameach to each and every one of you. Yeah.